Greetings, everybody. Welcome to today's national teleconference. And today's topic is 10 Secrets for Dramatically Increasing Your Sales, Part 2. Last month, we covered the first five, and today we're going to cover the remainder of it. And I am very happy to have with me again on the call Gary Garris, one of our coaching team members, and he is with Motivation Consultants, Inc., a travel incentive program. Gary has been just an integral part of the coaching team for the last year and a half or so. And Gary, I want to thank you for coming back and doing part two, and I'm just going to let you go ahead and take it from here.
Very good, Jim, and thank you for the invite, and I welcome everyone to the call this afternoon. Jim, let's get started. What is the secret of apples and oranges?
Well, we've all heard that you can't compare apples and oranges, but that's exactly what you need to do in selling, especially if you want to dramatically increase your sales. So let's look at several different ways to create a situation where your clients are forced to compare apples to oranges. And Gary, I think just giving some examples would be the best way to illustrate what I mean by that. What we're really talking about is creating differentiation, and you've got to create differentiation from your competitors. If you don't, you're always going to be in the price game. It's just always going to happen. And let's look at some areas outside the flooring industry first, and then we'll look at compare that to how that works in flooring. One area that I find interesting is in the when you're trying to do product differentiation, you know, if your competitor is offering X, you offer Y. And when they catch on and begin offering Y, you switch to offering Z. And a good example of that is Taco Bell. Now, Taco Bell used to just sell tacos, tostados, and burritos made from basically five ingredients: beans, ground beef, cheese, flour tortillas, and corn tortillas. I mean, they had a few other condiments and things, but that was basically it. Well, now there's so many fast food places that are kind of knockoffs of Taco Bell: Jim Boy's, Del Taco, Taco Bueno, and just a whole bunch of others. So Taco Bell is left with the problem of how are they going to create product differentiation using those same five ingredients? Well, they got very creative. They made the Enchirito, which is a burrito filled with meat and beans, but they put the sauce and the cheese on the outside instead of on the inside. The Mexamelt soft shell taco, the cheese roll up. Some of these I wasn't even aware of. I actually went to their website, Gary, and was looking them up, and they're just, I've always thought it was funny to watch Taco Bell come out with ever more and more creations using these same basic ingredients. Because let's face it, when you go to Taco Bell, everything tastes like Taco Bell. There's the Crunchwrap Supreme. I love this one. It's basically a tostada topped with beans, meat, and cheese, and then wrapped with a flour tortilla, then grilled so that the flour tortilla stays in place and you can hold it like a sandwich. And the ultimate is the taco pizza. Two tostada shells, sandwiching beans and meat, topped with sauce and cheese, okay? Now, this is supposed to be Mexican food, but you'll never, ever, ever, ever find any of these things in Mexico unless you go to a Taco Bell in Mexico. So in order to continue creating this differentiation, this is what most retail food restaurant types of situations wind up having to do. And the flooring is, of course, no different. Let's just look at carpeting for a minute. I mean, there's a lot of different materials, but your basic, most common materials are nylon, polyester, polypropylene, wool, and so forth. And then you've got your different weaves: cut pile, level loop, cut and loop, Saxony plush, woven, tufted, and flat weave are just a few of them. And that's just carpeting. You've also got wood, laminate, vinyl, tile, and all the other permutations of those products. So there's an ongoing battle to create ever more products to create differentiation. And there are tens of thousands of products already out there, with more being developed each year. And as a retailer, you should invest time into making sure you've got a good product mix. and create product differentiation from your competitors. You should do that. But it shouldn't be the only weapon in your arsenal of differentiation strategies. Too many flooring retailers think that because they've got this whiz-bang new product, whatever it happens to be, even if they've somehow got an exclusive on it, that is going to be the big silver bullet that solves their problems. And everyone knows what my opinion of silver bullets is. There is no such thing. There's no one thing you can do that will solve all your sales and marketing woes. If you are depending solely upon product differentiation as a way to create differentiation and create that market advantage, then the minute somebody else comes along with the same thing or something similar, a knockoff, then you've lost that competitive advantage. So, again, you should be looking for unique products to sell. You should be very aware of your region, what product mix works well for where you live. You know, what works well in Arizona is going to be different than what works well in Montana or Michigan. So what are some of the other ways to create apples to oranges comparisons? Well, being a trusted advisor versus a salesperson, doing strategies to position yourself as a trusted advisor, your guarantees and warranties, having a carefully designed sales process, and we're going to talk more about that in a minute. We're also going to talk about the guarantees and warranties more in a minute. A well-thought-out, on-purpose referral program, and we'll talk about that more in a minute as well. Joint ventures and testimonials. Testimonials are a great way to create apples to oranges to comparisons because, frankly, 98% of businesses, including flooring retailers, simply don't use them. By having them, you can create dramatic differentiation in apples to orange comparisons.
Well, Jim, those are very good points already, good examples. Let's move on to the next secret. You're saying mind reading. What is the secret of mind reading?
Well, let me start with a couple of stories that will help illustrate the point. As many of you know, I used to own a carpet cleaning company. Now, you want to talk about a commoditized business. In the carpet cleaning business, you are sucking dirt out of carpet fibers. Okay? It doesn't get any less romantic and more boring than that. So it's absolutely critical to create differentiation. Now, on one occasion, I visited a woman. She had a beautiful home, and she was interested in having her carpets cleaned. So, of course, over the course of the conversation, I learned that her daughter was getting married soon and that they were going to hold the reception in the woman's home. And it was very important for her that the house look at its best. So I focused my selling efforts in describing how the floors have a huge impact on how everything else looks, and that by having us cleaner carpets, her home would be a gorgeous showplace in which, you know, to create this wonderful memory of a lifetime. On a different occasion, I visited a home where one of the children suffered from horrible allergies, and I sold my prospect on the health benefits of regularly cleaning her carpets, how the carpet is a sink that holds on to pollens and mold and mildew spores and pollutants and so forth, and that regular carpet cleaning would help keep that sink from overflowing and make a more healthy environment. Now, what I didn't do in these situations was make the mistake that many salespeople do, and that is go in and immediately begin talking about all the benefits and features of my company. I listened. Now, how did I get the client to reveal these things to me? Well, I asked a lot of questions. In fact, when I would arrive at a client's home, I would immediately say something like, you know, before I measure your floors, I need to take 5 minutes and get some additional information with you. Can we sit down in your kitchen or living room for a few minutes and do that? And the answer, you know, 99 times out of 100 was yes. Now, I actually had a questionnaire that I went through, asking questions, and then I wrote down the answers. And this is what I eventually developed into the entire design audit system for floor dealers, which I talked about earlier, and we'll get into that a little more in just a bit. Now, Gary, it's absolutely possible, these stories should illustrate, that you can, quote-unquote, read your client's mind. But you won't do it by just going in and opening your mouth and talking and talking and talking. You've got to listen. That is the most important part of learning to read your client's mind. Now, as I said before, most salespeople spend too much time talking. I recommend using the 80-20 rule. You talk 20% of the time, they talk 80% of the time. And that 20% of the time should mostly be asking questions. You ask a lot of questions. Now, the design audit system, for example, contains a questionnaire that has 3 pages of questions that the salesperson asks, and then a 4th page, which is the prescription or professional recommendations. So even the form that I use in that strategy follows that 80-20 rule. It's mostly devoted to asking questions. This is a sales strategy that is used a lot, is remembering form, F-O-R-M, and it's a good way to talk to people and get them to open up about things that they may help you to sell them. When you're listening, when you're chatting with somebody, it's very important to do on-purpose type of listening. If they're chatting on about a story, you know, about fishing, or maybe the woman is talking about having to run her kids all over the place and telling some long, seemingly irrelevant story, many times there's little nuggets in there where they will tell you exactly what you need to know to be able to sell them your product. A great book that I recommend that goes into listening-based selling, call this listening-based selling, is by Dan Kennedy. It's the No BS Sales Success in the New Economy. Fantastic book, highly recommend it. And in there are 5 tips to help turbocharge your listening. And I'm just going to list them briefly. You can get more the full details when you buy the book. But first one is focus. So before you meet with a prospect or client, clear all distractions on your mind so you can pay attention to them. Second is determine in advance why the person you're going to be listening to is important to you and why what they might say is important to you. Listen. The third thing is listen for information and insight that you can use to engineer cooperation from the other person. That's what I was talking about earlier. Any kind of stories that they have, anecdotes, how their day is going, anything like that can be used to help you sell. Number 4 is be an active listener. So use good eye contact, nod, give feedback. And then the 5th thing is writing down notes as you listen. This shows that you're really listening to them and shows that you care. And it's something that most salespeople never, ever do. So it's a great strategy for creating differentiation as well.
Jim, that's a great explanation on your secret of mind reading. Let's move on to the next one, and that is your secret of negative preparation. Explain that if you would.
Okay. Well, first I'm going to explain the myth of positive thinking. And a lot of people think that positive thinking is a magic talisman like garlic that keeps vampires away. And if you think positive thoughts and, you know, recite your daily mantra of positive things, positive thoughts, the bad things won't happen and good things will. And this is a tragic mistake. I believe in thinking positively. If you're perpetually negative, you're going to self-sabotage. So positive thinking and expecting a good outcome is necessary. Dan Kennedy talks about the positive power of negative preparation. And let me give you an example of what that means. I have a very large family, and a lot of them live close by, and we do a lot of family get-togethers, birthdays and holidays and so forth. And we have a handful of members who are chronically late. They're never, ever, ever on time. we love them dearly, but we know they're going to be late. So my mom when putting together, say, an event where everybody's bringing dishes, a different dish to, say we're doing Thanksgiving, well, mom or whoever's hosting will not have that handful of relatives bring the turkey. They'll have them bring a non-essential side dish so that we can get started without them, and then when they finally show up with, you know, the green bean casserole or something, it's fine, but we don't have to wait for them. So that's an example of the positive power of negative preparation. We all will take we expect to have a good Thanksgiving. We expect it to be a great time together. We're positive about it, and then it's going to turn out well. But we know that there's possibly some things that could go wrong. So we prepare, we admit and face the fact that those things can go wrong, i.e. late relatives, and we take steps to counter it. That is not negative thinking. It's you're using the positive power of negative preparation. So how do you do this in a selling situation? Well, you want to, a great way to do this is to list out every possible objection that you're going to encounter with a prospect. Now, somebody that has the wrong idea about positive thinking may think, oh, well, that's, you know, you're just thinking negatively. No, not at all. You expect the sales outcome to turn out the way you want. You expect the sales process to go well. But in order to facilitate that sales process and achieve the outcome that you're looking for, you prepare, you do negative preparation ahead of time. So listing out every possible objection is a great way to do that, and there's three steps. First of all, write out a list of every possible objection that you could possibly encounter with a prospect. And then write one or more answers to overcome each objection ahead of time. Don't wait until you get the objection to try and figure out what you're going to say. Figure it out ahead of time. And the third step is memorize these answers and have your sales team do the same.
Jim, those are another great explanation. Let's move on to the next secret that you'd like to talk about today, and that is of toxic waste. Please tell our listeners what you mean by toxic waste.
Okay. Well, you know, I have a friend who is very close to me, who is perpetually negative about the world. He's convinced the world is going to end any minute. And if I spend too much time with him and I allow the conversation to stay in that doom and gloom mode, it really gets me down. It begins to affect me. I'm a pretty positive person. I generally expect things to go well. And I'll actually find myself losing hope if I am around that kind of thinking too much. So as much as I like some of his other qualities, sometimes I have to minimize contact with him. And when I do see him, you know, I make sure that I purposefully make sure the topic stays on something positive. You know, another industry that I did a lot of work in was the mortgage and real estate industry. And there was a sales rep for a lender who I did business with for a very short time. And this guy had seen it all. He'd heard it all. And was extremely jaded and cynical. And this was back actually when I first began working in the industry. And so I was still learning. And so if you had a question, this guy would answer in such a way as to make you feel like an idiot. And he generally just negative about the industry, about clients and so forth, was very derogatory towards them. If you had a, and this guy was trying to get my business was the funny thing. So I quickly ended my relationship with this company and never worked with this guy again. So the secret of toxic waste is in avoiding it. The entrepreneurial game is 90% mental, and it's critical that you surround yourself with positive people who are going to encourage you. You've also got to, it's critical that you minimize contact with toxic people. Get these people out of your lives, or if that's not possible, minimize contact with them. You know, for instance, relatives and things that, you know, may perhaps you have to see them occasionally, but keep them at a distance. They will make your life stressful and miserable, and their endless toxicity is going to poison your efforts not only to grow personally, but also to grow your business. So let's talk about two areas where in the floor covering we're going to tend to want run into toxic people. And the first one is toxic clients. And always remember the 80-10-10 rule. We talked about this, Gary, in the last call, that about 10% of the buying public are price shoppers, hardcore, diehard price shoppers. They don't care about anything but price. The other 10% at the top, all they care about is quality. They'll pay anything. They just want the highest quality. And the other 80% are in the middle, and they're willing to pay more, but you've got to convince them and show them why it's in their best interest to pay more for quality. So let's talk about that 10% at the bottom who are just die-hard price shoppers. That is a toxic attitude because all they care about is price. They do not care about quality. And this kind of person, as everybody on the call probably is nodding their heads in agreement, they also tend to be very critical, and a lot of other most of your problems are going to come from those people that are the most price sensitive. Other clients, maybe they aren't so price sensitive, but maybe they're just overly critical and they can't be satisfied. No matter what you do, they're going to be unhappy. Now, usually those two go together. The price shopper tends to be that overly critical person. And then another kind of client is somebody that's unreasonably suspicious of you and your motives. You know, everybody's out to get them. And it's like you're on trial when you're working with them. You're constantly having to prove your case that you're not going to rip them off, that you're not going to, you know, sell them a piece of junk carpet or laminate and charge them high prices though you're selling them premium stuff. I mean, it goes on and on with these kind of people. And again, they tend to be price shoppers. Now, I've had clients who weren't price shoppers so much, but they did display some of those other characteristics. So what you've got to do is realize that not everybody is your ideal client. And there are some people out there you do not want to do business with. And so one of the important things to do in selling and eliminating the toxic waste is to realize that at least 10% of the clients that come in your door are probably not your ideal client. And once you discover that they are this kind of person, get rid of them quickly as possible. And you can do it politely and professionally and say something like, you know what, it looks like that maybe our company is just not going to be the right fit for you. You know, you might want to try XYZ company down the street. Make sure you refer them to a competitor that you don't like and let them deal with them. The next area of toxicity in your flooring business is going to be coworkers, employees, managers, in other words, people that are on the team, okay? And in every business, it seems like there is at least one person that has seen it all, done it all, heard it all, very cynical, very jaded, also somebody that perpetually complains, okay? Doesn't matter what you do. There's no solutions. They don't have any solutions. They're just going to gripe. Nothing is ever right. Okay? We've all worked around people like this. And if you're the owner of flooring store, if you're the owner, you need to get rid of them quickly, if at all possible. If they're a relative and part owner with you, well, that's a whole other ball of wax that we won't be able to get into other than to say minimizing their contact with clients and minimizing their impact on the business to the greatest degree possible. But if they're an employee, get rid of them. There's way too many people out there who are positive and will not bring the rest of the team down. These kinds of people tend to be closed to new ideas. Anytime you come up with any new idea, new program, something to step outside the box, they're going to give you the 10 reasons why it won't work. Now, if you ask them for what they think you should do, they're going to be very short of anything revolutionary outside the box or have any ideas of their own, because this kind of person tends to be very narrow in their thinking. They are not creative. They are not the kind of people that are going to have groundbreaking new ideas that'll take you into new places because they're toxic, and it eliminates that kind of thinking altogether. So those are the two areas that you're going to find in your flooring stories: your toxic clients, get rid of them, and toxic coworkers, employees, or managers, get rid of them. If anybody on this call is in a situation where they are an employee, we're mostly talking to business owners, store owners, but if you are an employee and you've got a manager or another employee or somebody that's negative, the best thing to do is to distance yourself from them. Ultimately, if you can't, you know, flooring stores tend to be small companies and you can't minimize your contact, well, you may need to look at moving on because it's that big of a problem. They will drag you down and they will impact your ability to have a peaceful work environment and to succeed. Now, what I'd like to do is we're going to go ahead and in just a few minutes, we're going to open up this to questions and answers, troubleshooting, and that sort of thing. And so if you would like to participate in the Q&A session, which will start in just a bit, press *6 on your phone right now, and that'll put you in the Q&A queue. In fact, hang on a minute. I'm going to go ahead and turn that on. So it's on now. If you want to participate, press *6 on your phone. That'll put you in the Q&A queue, and we'll get to that towards the end. So anyway, Gary, why don't you go ahead with the next question?
Very good, Jim. What are the two things you must train your sales team to do in order to maximize sales in any market?
Well, two things are having a well-defined sales process, which we talked about earlier, and also using a referral system. So let's talk about those one at a time. First of all, having a well-defined sales process. Someone told me a long time ago that if you don't have a system for selling, you'll always be at the mercy of your client's system for buying. And that usually boils down to shopping on price. If you are a Platinum member on this call, you have access to the Design Audit, which is a totally engineered system that leads clients on a logical step-by-step process from shoppers into buyers. And you should make use of this with every single sale. You should use it on every sale. Now, if you don't have the access to the Design Audit system, here are some elements that you want to include as you put together your sales process. And remember, this should be a process. The problem that I see with too many salespeople is they wing it. They kind of fly by the seat of their pants. They don't have any scripts memorized. They certainly haven't thought out the objections ahead of time and written out responses to it. So you want to, as a store owner, you want to create a sales process that can be followed step by step by yourself and your sales team. So here's some elements that you want to have. It should lead the clients on a logical step-by-step process that transforms them from shoppers into buyers. Okay, from the minute they walk into the store, everything that happens to them should be carefully orchestrated. Okay, don't let them control the sales process. You need to take control of the sales process immediately. Second thing is it should create total differentiation between you and every other flooring dealer. You have an opportunity here during the sales process to completely set yourself apart. Don't waste this opportunity by doing what everybody else does. Create differentiation. Very critical. It should position you and your sales team as trusted advisors rather than as salespeople. Now think about when you go in and see your family doctor, how that feels, you know, the emotions. Are you relaxed? Are you tense? Do you feel like they care about you? Do you feel like they're looking out for your best interest? And compare that with when you go in and see a used car salesman. You know, you feel like you're being hustled, lied to, that they really don't care about you. It's very, very, very tense in comparison. So as you create your system, you want it to feel like to your clients like they're visiting that family doctor rather than going into a used car lot. It should let the client paint a large target on themselves. Now, that goes back to the mind reading that we talked about earlier, Gary, that you don't want to just open up and begin talking and talking and, you know, telling all the great benefits of everything that you sell in your store and so forth. You want to ask questions, and you should have very specific questions that lead you to understand exactly what it is that the client wants and needs, and let them paint a target on themselves. It should definitely increase your closed sale batting average. I mean, if you've got, let's say, you know, I tell my platinum members this all the time, some who are not using the design audit, to encourage them. I'll say, okay, let's say that you've got, besides yourself, say, three other sales team members. Let's just do some math here. If you've got, that's four salespeople, and let's say that your average ticket is $3,000, okay? Now, let's say that you're able to increase your closed sale batting average so that each sales team member does an extra two sales a month. Just, I mean, that is really low, very conservative. So if all four salespeople do an extra two sales a month, that's an extra eight sales a month times $3,000, that's your average ticket. That's an extra $24,000 per month times 12 months, that's an extra $288,000 per year. Now, if you're a foreign retailer that operates in the, you know, $900,000 to say $1.3 million range, that's an extra 25-30% almost extra revenue just by increasing the closed sale batting average of each of your sales team members by two per month. So this can, by having this kind of a system in place, pays huge dividends. So it's definitely worth investing the time and energy in making sure that you have this kind of a system in place. Now, it should also naturally lead to upsells that don't feel like upsells. You know, when your doctor, let's go back to the family physician example, Gary. When you go in and they make a recommendation for you to say, let's say they prescribe an antibiotic, it doesn't feel like they're selling you antibiotics. Or if they, you know, suggest that perhaps you get a heating pad or take these vitamins or whatever they suggest, it doesn't sound like they're trying to sell you stuff. It sounds like they're making recommendations, and that's what you want to do with your sales process. You want to be able to make these upsells that really fit with what the client needs. Don't just throw everything but the kitchen sink at them. You know, your doctor doesn't go, well, how about if we get you some antibiotics? Okay, how about some cough syrup? Okay, how about if we get you this injection of whatever? It doesn't work like that. They find out what you need, and then they do the upsells. Actually, it's not their recommendations, and they don't feel like upsells at all. And finally, your system should be very, very paint by numbers that you can teach your sales team. It should not be owner dependent. In other words, that if you're a store owner, this system that you create should not be something that you have to do in order to make it work. It should be definitely paint by numbers, step by step type of process. Again, if you're a platinum member, the design audit does all those things, and you should absolutely be making use of that. If not, if you don't have access to that, those are the elements that you need to include in your sales process. Now, let's talk about the second thing that you need to do to maximize sales, and that is having a referral system. Now, for most flooring dealers, referrals are a happy accident. If you do a good job long enough, you're eventually going to get some referral business because people want to refer people that they, you know like, and trust. So it does happen. In fact, even, you know, I've talked to many, many floor dealers, surveyed a lot of floor dealers, and even the ones that don't have a referral system, a significant portion of their business comes from referral clients. So why not turbocharge that? So, again, if you're in the Platinum program, you have access to the turnkey referral system. and has all the elements you need to make it work successfully. If you don't have access, here are the elements that you need to include as you build a referral system. First, it should actually be a system. Okay? Your referral system should be part of your day-to-day business operations. You're just like ordering the materials, the products to put for your client, doing invoicing, and scheduling the installation, making the follow-up visit, et cetera, et cetera. Your referral system should work just like that, day in, day out. It should not be based on the whim or the mood of the sales team. Okay, if the sales team is in a bad mood, if one of the members is feeling grumpy that day or has a cold, that doesn't stop the material from getting ordered or the installation from getting scheduled. It still gets done, business as usual. So getting the referral should not be dependent on anybody's mood. It should be a system that operates day in and day out. Okay, the next thing is it should plant the referral seeds. So your clients need to be educated from the beginning of the buying process that you prefer to work with referred clients and that you expect referrals from them. And you need to educate them on why it's in their best interest to actually refer people to you. And that is not limited to, you know, some kind of referral reward. There are other benefits, too, for them to refer people that they know and in their sphere of influence to your company. And you need to educate them on this. Now, the third thing is you need to market to them for referrals. All of your active current clients that are in the buying process, from the time a client walks into your store until the flooring is installed, anywhere from 2 weeks to 2 months can go by. And this is a prime opportunity to market to them for referrals. So you should have an on-purpose marketing plan that markets to those people. They're thinking about flooring. It's on their mind. It's a huge event. It's not like going out and buying a lamp. This is a major deal. And they're very, very hot on the idea of getting floors. I'll give you an example of how this works in a client's mind. It's called the reticular activator, and we actually have Platinum members have a reticular activator campaign that they use. But it works like this. You know, pregnant women tend to notice other pregnant women. If you buy a new SUV, black SUV, you're going to tend to notice other, you know, black SUVs that are of the same make. If you buy a certain kind of Nike shoe, you're going to notice other people who are wearing that same kind of shoe. We're all like that. And the flooring, getting new flooring is a big, big event. So during that 2 weeks to 2 months that they're in that buying process, man, it is on the forefront of their mind. They are red hot to give you referrals. So take advantage of this time, and that's how the reticular activator works. So anyway, market to your referrals, and then the next thing that it should include is you want to set up a situation where when your salesperson asks for the referrals at the end of the job, that the client is eager and happy to do so, that it doesn't feel, you know, staged and awkward and so forth. Your sales team needs to be trained and rehearse asking for those referrals and doing so at the right time. So again, if you're in Platinum, you've got that whole system set up. You can use it. If not, then take the elements that I've told you and have a referral system in place. And let's real quickly, Gary, if we could, do the math on how powerful referrals can be. Let's say that you're doing, let's call it 40 installations a month, 40 sales a month, okay, total. And, you know, plug in whatever numbers you are accurate for your store. But for this example, let's use 40. And if you use a referral system like I just described, I'm able to get 5 to 7 referrals off of every job. But let's be real conservative and call it three referrals per job. 40 times 3 is 120 referrals. Now, are all 120 of those referrals going to need flooring right now, instantly? No. No, they're not. But if you've got, by asking the right questions, asking for the referral at the right time, doing it correctly, you can identify the 10% or so that need flooring right that minute. So out of 120, you should be able to get 10 or 12 that need flooring right now. And let's go back to, say, your average ticket is $3,000. 3,000 times 12 is an extra $36,000 a month, times 12 months, which is an extra $432,000 a year, just by having an on-purpose referral system in place. That's how powerful that is, Gary. And, you know, if you're listening to this later, rewind the CD, go back and do the math, plug in your own numbers. You'll see that by investing the energy and the time into creating a referral program pays huge dividends, and really critical that you do that. And a way to absolutely dramatically increase your sales. So let's face it, when somebody walks in who's a stranger, who has never done business with you before and wasn't referred, let's say they walk in off of a Yellow Page ad, everybody knows how difficult those people are to work with, that they're suspicious, they're standoffish, they tend to be price shoppers, versus when somebody comes in who was referred to your store. It's a completely different experience. It's much less price resistant, much easier to work with. You're going in on what Bob Berg calls borrowed trust. And if you want to make your sales more effective, make it easier, and dramatically increase your sales, then you absolutely must devote time to creating a referral system that generates those ongoing referrals. That is so much easier than trying to figure out how to take a Yellow Page client and somehow go through all the hard work of taking them from a 1 or a 2 on a 1 to 10 scale of ready to buy and getting them to be a 9 or a 10 on a 1 to 10 scale. Your referrals are already at the 8, 9, and 10 because they're already convinced that they can trust you. So, okay, Gary, it looks like we don't have any questions at this point, so why don't we go ahead and wrap it up with the last, let you wrap it up then.
Very good, Jim. You have a bonus secret for our group today. What is that?
Okay. What I want to do is give some quotes first before I say what it is. So first quote is by Dennis Waitley, and he says that all of the top achievers I know are lifelong learners, looking for new skills, insights, and ideas. If they're not learning, they're not growing, not moving toward excellence. The next quote is from Brian Tracy. He says that no one lives long enough to learn everything they need to learn starting from scratch. To be successful, we absolutely positively have to find people who have already paid the price to learn things that we need to learn to achieve our goals. And finally, quote that I love, school is never out for the professional. So the bonus secret is to invest time and money into self-education, into learning. Self-education is the absolute best investment that you can make. Okay, the vast majority of your competitors will never, ever, ever invest in self-education. So if you want a shortcut to putting yourself ahead of the competition, devote time, energy, and money into your own self-education. To increase your income, it's going to increase your personal satisfaction in your selling and your selling career. Being an entrepreneur. What Brian Tracy said is so important. No one lives long enough to learn everything they need to know starting from scratch. So getting coaching and learning from others is such an important part of self-education. You don't need to go all the way back to start, you know, figure out how to make fire and then work your way forward. Learn from others who've been down that road before and already paid the price of making the mistakes and figuring out how to make these different strategies and so forth work. So if you're part of the Success Launch or the Inner Circle Club, you know, congratulations, because by participating, you're investing in self-education, and you're doing what most flooring professionals will never, ever do. So, Gary, thank you so much for coming on the call today, and I appreciate you being here.
It was my pleasure, Jim, and the best of luck to the group. Continued good selling.
Okay, everybody, thanks for being on the call. Stay tuned. We've got some great marketing tips that will be coming out to you this month via email. And until next time, everybody, happy marketing.